Okay, so for those of you who don't know me, I'm Tabora Kegel. I did not grow up from, and it's actually a complete miracle that I'm here today because my mother's side of the family has a break of probably about nine generations from someone who was from to me. My first cousins are not Jewish. So I really feel like I'm a walking miracle, Baruch Hashem. And add to that pile of statistics the fact that I was a very, very strong feminist in college. I was in the Women's Center, Women with a Y, etc. And I thought that I knew nothing about Orthodox Judaism. I'd never met a religious Jew in my life until I was about 24. But when I came to Manhattan, I met some people. And I was working for the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, researching neo-Nazis and skinheads in America. That was my job, and my first job out of school. And there was a from guy who worked at the organization who looked extremely normal to me. Little did I know, I'm just kidding. So he explained he's Orthodox. I said to him, like, point blank, no, you're not. He's like, excuse me? I was like, you have no payas and no beard and no black coat. And he's like, okay, we need to rewind. So once I established, oh, this guy is actually Orthodox, I told him, I have a few questions for you then. And literally every lunch break, I used to go at him with every women's issue I had. The poor guy, I mean, I'm rachmanis for him. But anyway, he was really great about it. And I just literally would attack him every lunch hour with every possible issue I had. And he gave me a book to read. And more than any answer that he had, and this is the first point that I want to get across, more than any answer he had, and he was a man, so he probably didn't have, like, the best answers, he brought me to Shabbat meals on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and I was meeting, my perception of Orthodox women was barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen, baby machine, shmata, don't say boo, right, serve your husband grapes, not that there's anything wrong with that, but anyway, so this was my perception, and then he brought me to these meals on the West Side, and these women were the most unbelievable, confident, assertive, fantastic women I'd ever met. And I was like, okay, something's wrong with this picture, right? Because if my perception is everyone's a shmata and yet the women I'm meeting are amazing, something's got to give. So that's the first point I wanted to bring across, is that more than like knowing the material and the answers to the questions that they have, even more important than that is just being a great role model of what it means to be a Jewish woman. Right, the fact that, you know, and I hate to bring it down to this, forgive me, it's my thing, but the way that you present yourself aesthetically makes a huge difference to a lot of women, okay? I'm going to say this, am I on tape? Oh, gosh. Okay, so for me, I could have listened to a million lectures by Rebbetzins. It would have done zero for me. As soon as I met a woman who I felt like I could relate to, she had, like, a nice shetel and, like, her, you know, nice apartment, and she put her table together very pretty. I was like, oh, no, this I could do, right? So you have to be relatable to people. I don't mean to in any way suggest that we should compromise on our tzniyas at all. But I do feel that for a lot of secular girls, you guys are all great at this. You look fantastic. But I think very carefully, let's say when I go to Rutgers, they bring me in once a semester, which I just want to make a plug right now because I hear a lot of people saying we can't split the group by gender. Rutgers does it every semester for me. They put the guys on the side of the room and the girls on the side of the room, and I give a class to the girls, and who was the woman talking, Batsheva, about the power of women learning together? I am such an advocate for this. I think that when you take out the guys from the room, or at least they're hanging about over there and they can't hear us, there's something magical that happens among the women. They just open themselves up to Torah in a way that they will not do if the men are there, and this is just been my experience. I really encourage you to push the envelope a little bit in this category. You can make it the whole sorority thing and whatever. You can, you know, get them in that way. But I feel very strongly that a woman is most moved and grows most when she's among women, taught by women. Okay? He brings me in as a hired gun once a semester to deal. He's like, deal with all women's issues in an hour. I'm like, oh, no problem. Okay? So that's where the class came out. I put together this class, the top 10 myths about Orthodox Jewish women. And they were all my misconceptions, so I know firsthand that they're thinking this. And I have them raise their hand, you know, do you think this? And they're all, like, raising their hand. I'm raising my hand. I also thought that. So I'm going to go through them really quickly, just so you, and I'm happy to give them out. But I think that the first point I wanted to get across is that just being a Kiddush Hashem yourself as a Jewish woman goes miles. It doesn't even matter what you say. I mean, it does, but the first step is just being relatable and being a Kiddush Hashem and normal and fun and cool and talking to them about things that they relate to. I think very carefully about how I present myself when I go to Rutgers, because it's just the way we are, human nature. If I can relate aesthetically to someone, I'm more likely to listen to what they have to say.
So why I'm with Rutgers my. More than a different
That's my most secular gig during the year.
Oh.
That's just why I'm giving that over. That's just the farthest away students is that gig. You know, mostly I teach, let's say, girls who have spent a little time. You know, I teach at Sold. I've done a few series at Sold that Jackie talked about earlier. You know, I teach more for girls who have some background. At Rutgers, you know, I'm teaching M1 or whatever it is, girls who have very little experience. I might be one of the first Orthodox women they've ever met. You know, so that's why I'm very, like, careful. Like, how do I want to present myself? How do I want to... Because I just want to break down all of their... They're like, you're religious? Like, they just... They have this picture in their mind. I know I had the same picture. You know? Okay. So, yeah.
Imagine on our campus, the guys are just as bothered.
By the feminist issues,
yeah,
right.
Really. Like, they're bothered by it. Like,
yeah.
Why do you feel like they don't need to hear it?
I'm sure they do need to hear it. I personally, from my tsnius factor, I don't speak to men because for various reasons.
Okay,
first
great,
of all, my material is geared, like 99% of it is geared to women. So other than the very left-wing campuses, like at Rutgers, I don't think the guys are really sitting around thinking, like dwelling on, you know, how they want the girls to be rabbis. Like, but I hear that at certainly where I went to school, that was the energy on campus was very much there were men, male feminists, you know. So I get that, and I'm sure that they could benefit from the material. I just personally, it's not going to happen. Yeah.
I just had a side note. Do you tell people you're covering your hair? Did you tell them that this
yeah,
is your tone?
Yeah, I do. My thing is I like fooling them and then telling them.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I usually, and I've done that from day one with Shabbos guests. Like, I really
you
like to.
Bring it up.
What?
You always bring it up.
I always, yeah, somehow it's brought up in the conversation, or I say some little hint or something, because I want them to know, and I think it's a Kiddush Hashem that you can do it attractively and whatever.
Besides for like the aesthetics of like dress and everything, I know everyone has different personalities, but for those of us who are naturally like loud,
not you.
I think that right away they just like floored that, you know, wow, I thought like you said, Orthodox
right.
women are just like they have no opinion, they're
right.
just like a doormat, they're so that already is just
yes.
like such a
eye-opener. We had parents over of this girl who was becoming from, and we do have a lot of parents over, and so we had her parents. And her dad was a big feminist. So her dad was like, already came in, you know, like this, like major baggage, right? Comes into my house for Shabbos. And by the end of the meal, he came up to me personally and he said, I just want you to know you've completely changed my view of Orthodox Jewish women. I thought, da 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 da, that I thought, right? And you're so, you know, assertive and whatever. He had used nice words for loud, right? And, you know, I'm just so impressed, and I didn't know this and whatever. And Baruch Hashem, her parents are from now, basically. So not from me. I'm just saying, like, the fact that you can be a Kiddush Hashem in this area is fantastic. Let's all use our, really most of the women in this room are not wallflowers. Let's use it all Kiddush Hashem that you can really help people to break down stereotypes that, you know, this is not how you have to be. You don't have to melt into wallpaper. Mm-hmm. Should I go through these 10 things and then take questions, or should I take them now? Yeah, okay, fine. Okay, so number one, and these are just, again, coming from my own perspective of the things that I thought. I felt these were the top 10 misconceptions that people have. So number one, religious women shave their heads when they get married. When I first started looking into Judaism, my mother said to me, are you going to shave your head? I said, no. She said, fine, do whatever you want. Baruch Hashem. They're real Americans. So I basically explained that, you know, a small segment of certain Hasidic branches of Judaism do this, and I explained why. But I give them...
Start with that question? I'm sorry, I'm just curious.
Yes.
That's your first question?
Yes, because this, I'm telling you, other than the sheet, this is the one, this is the main...
Really?
Sheet is number two. Okay? Yes.
I gave a class on love and marriage, and no one heard of the sheet.
I know, it's going out of vogue.
Out of vogue.
They also gave a class like, what sheet?
Yeah, they had no idea what I'm talking about. I said, ask me any question. They had no questions. I was so disappointed.
What? I mean, I hope it continues. I hope it
continues.
I've still met a lot of people who feel this way. Okay, so I do start with that, and because I know that for a lot of the people that I meet, this is the thing. Wait, so you shave your head? You don't have hair under there, right? Okay.
You shave
so,
tomorrow. Issue or like
what?
A hair?
I talk about the mikvah. No, I talk about that from my understanding that the primary, and I spoke to a sophomore woman about this actually, that they primarily currently today do that because it's they consider it problematic.
That's what they do it today from.
Right. It was not originally that way.
Where it comes from is from pogroms in Europe.
I know. They used to rape the.
They all shave their heads. So we all have done it. We all would have done it at that time of year. They shave their heads at that time.
Right.
And also that they could have physically grabbed their ponytails.
Point. So now that they continue doing it, people like made up this thing that it's a chatzitza, but that's where it came from.
Right.
Where it came from.
Okay, whatever.
Hair was
right, I'm sure that's true also.
I would give more information about why we do
have ladies, they're going to cut me off. Yes.
Sorry, the one sitting next to me. Just out of practically, I'd like to know, do you take these 10 and debunk one at a time and create a class around it?
Yeah.
Did you create a presentation around the debunking of 10 minutes?
Yeah, that's what this is. Okay. Exactly. Okay, number two, Orthodox people have sex with a sheep. Okay, so I actually...
No, really.
So... That Orthodox people have sex with a sheep. This is a very... I'm glad to hear that it's changing, but it's... Right. So a lot of people do have the conception that that sex is just for conception. And that we have this puritanical view about sexuality, like the Christians, whatever. So I am very clear about, you know, first of all, it's halacha that at the actual point of consummation, there should be nothing separating the man and the woman. And I do go into a little bit of the halacha is about intimacy and the hashgacha is about intimacy. The mitzvah of onah, that a husband has an obligation to please his wife. This is mind-blowing to them. I'm like, I'm sorry, but this is the most feminist religion in the whole world. Like, it's in the marriage contract. He has to please you in bed. Hello? Like, this is not normal. And they're like, oh, wow. You know, it's so interesting. Okay. So I talk about how the Talmud talks about how to seduce your wife, that this is a woman carries around her entire day in her head. Okay, Costco, PTA, whatever, right? And that the man is required to enable her to let go of her day so she can be in the moment when they're together. This is brought down the Gemara. It's beautiful. This is like such a Kiddush Hashem. For them to hear this, they're like, wow. First of all, that like the Talmud is talking about sex, this is mind-blowing to them. But then it's talking about sex in terms of pleasing the woman. This is unbelievable to them. Yes.
I was just add, because last week I gave a class on this, that they were floored. What impressed them most is I was explaining how, you know, besides for, I said like, Divrei Chiba is not just like street talk, like, you know, people do, just like buzzwords that are a turn on. I said, the fact that you say you're so giving and you always are there for me, and just like nice things to them, they're like, can you tell the guys that, like,
exactly,
they were,
right,
like,
instead of you're so hot, right? Right, exactly. Okay, number three, birth control is allowed. Right, this is a very common misconception among people. Mm-hmm. Probably even in the foreign world.
Birth control is not.
So yeah, birth control is not allowed. Right. So you know, so I basically do tell them that pretty much everything, from my understanding, is allowed except for the condom, and that it's considered basically like we don't not have a kid just because it's like not good timing for me and I want $200,000 in the bank. Like that's not a Jewish value. But that certainly anything that's going to cause physical or emotional or psychological problems for the woman is a very valid excuse, or not excuse, but reason, and whatever, I go into that a little bit. Number four, Orthodox women are supposed to be passive in bed. I go through sources from Ohel Rachel, from the Gemara, Rashi, that you know, that this is not the case, and the woman actually has a greater desire than a man, blah, 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 but it's for more holistic. I'm speeding this up because they're kicking me out, and I just want to get to all 10. Okay, number five, tznias laws exist because men are animals. I thought this, ladies, okay?
Is that a myth or is that the truth?
This is a myth, okay. We'll talk later.
Okay, that's interesting. My husband always used that approach to
just
the guys.
Just to clarify.
Yeah. Like an animal meaning a tahara, the body, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And
so I really liked, who was it talking yesterday, maybe it was Esther Ween, that, that sneas for a woman is not just about what happens when you walk in the room with a bunch of guys and you're not dressed appropriately. For you yourself, who was talking about this?
Esther.
For you yourself, I can tell you firsthand knowledge, when I used to dress in much smaller clothing, I was very much more focused on myself as a goof. Because you're like, wait, am I covered? Did I work out enough? You know, like, you're very connected to yourself as a body. Now that I dress differently, I'm like, oh, I'm like really focused on my neshama. You know, it's really, really true. I just wanted to tell you on a side note, I do give a really awesome class on SNEAS, and it's not at all like preachy and annoying. It's very much like from my first-hand experience, and I always tell them that, you know, first of all, the fumtar agra, right, that you get a reward according to the effort for a mitzvah, and I'm not 100% sure if there's anyone getting more reward for this than me. I'm just kidding. But, like, really, it's true. When my friends became from, a lot of them could take their entire wardrobe with them when they became from. They always liked long, hippie, trippy skirts, whatever. They took a lot of their wardrobe with them. There was not one article of clothing in my entire closet that was halachically acceptable. Right, there were no kikibikis. I had to wear twin sets. Okay, it was very hot. But I'm saying, but I literally could not take one piece of clothing with me, and you know, it was all korban and whatever. Baruch Hashem, you know, it's been a very long journey for me, even to the point of like 9 years ago, we moved from Manhattan, where anything goes, and just because you have something covering your hair a little bit, you're like Rebbetzin on the West Side, to Passaic, where let's just say it's a little different. So 9 years ago is when I really, honestly, I started keeping things halachically fully. So it was a very, and I've been becoming from for 18 years. So it was a really long journey for me, and it's a very hard issue, continues to be a hard issue. But I do a really nice class on this that's not preachy and annoying. So if that's anything that interests anyone. Okay, really quickly. Number 7, the mikvah is about
that's
a woman.
Six.
You guys are so good. The reason women don't sign the ketubah is because Judaism is sexist. Okay, I can't do this whole thing, but I basically talk about what the ketubah is. It's a protection for the woman. Again, about pleasing her in bed. This is great, right? The ketubah's purpose is to strengthen the woman's presence of honor.
Really, a minute.
Yeah.
This is your choice right now. Jackie Engel canceled her class. You now have a choice of staying here and making this last through the next session, or going next door to hear Risa Brimmer talk about young professionals, or Nalini is supposed to share her class materials in this room, so you're going to have to figure out amongst yourselves what you want to do. It's your conference, guys, so you make a choice. Is Nalini here?
We'll just stay here till Nalini.
So you can stay here till if Nalini comes, then she gets
to take
over.
Maybe there's another room.
No, so there's two. So there's really close to two. So the question is, what do people want to hear? It's up to you. Right. So you can keep going.
Okay.
And then if anybody wants to go and hear about young professionals, that's now.
I won't take
so
it
you'll have to just get up and leave.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
If you want to hear Nalini,
let's get to 10.
Then,
let's get to 2.
Okay. So. I write that this is obviously in direct contrast to other religions that viewed Judaism, that viewed women as chattel, as property, right? This is not the Jewish approach, right? I give sources for this. I do deal with the Agunah issue. Unfortunately, this has been in the news a lot.
You bring it up?
I bring it up because they all, especially now, they all know about it, and it's a big Chilul Hashem. So I do talk about why this is, and the fact that, let's be honest, this is about a man being a jerk. Okay, this is not a flaw in the Torah or Judaism. This is about individual yichidim who are acting badly. And I do talk about the rabbis are working around the clock to try to find solutions for this. I don't know if I can, I don't know enough about the prenuptial agreements that they're coming up with now to know whether this is halakhically acceptable. From my understanding, it's not so pashut. Yeah.
So my biggest problem, the reason I try not to bring it up, is they say, you're right, the guy's acting like a jerk. Why does the Torah give a man that power?
Right.
So
the one that has to give it.
Right.
Yeah. She said yesterday,
when
you
want
the
divorce,
we'll
get a divorce.
And when you canceled her session, so whoever wants to stay here until 11:55, you're free to do
so. What's it called? Esther Wien said yesterday, the only people who were there, that he says that to answer that question, that they signed the contract, so no one else could get them as a contract that they signed.
Right.
It's
just the flip side.
Because it used to be like for a man to make a contract to marry a woman was like a really big deal. He now has to support her financially and everything, take care of her. And if she was the one to be allowed to get out of it, what's in it for him to get married?
Mm-hmm.
So by him being the one that gets to make the decision, then there's something in it for him to get married.
Right.
Also, I feel like every case of like with not every, I'm saying not whatever, but not every case where there's a get and people automatically say the man is like, if you don't know what's going on at all, so to judge whatever it is.
Right, and I have to say this
like,
recent case that was
yeah,
all over the place.
It's much
there's
more complicated than you think. Like
scenes.
I know stories where it was the woman who was using that as leverage
right.
to only have total control of the kids. So
right.
it can't always be judged that
right.
just.
Yeah.
I'm saying.
And I do bring up the fact that we used to live in small, tight-knit communities where, let's be honest, what happened was basically there was a progression of things that would happen to the man, right? He wouldn't be given the aliyah and shul, then people wouldn't patronize his business, down the line, till eventually, if he still was not complying, some of the more bodybuilding guys in the shtetl would go over and convince his soul to do the right thing. Okay, or convince his body to do the right thing, because his soul really always wants to do the right thing. I'm 100% in favor for this. There have been some problems with these rabbis in the news, whatever, getting paid a lot of money for it, that I don't know about. I don't know if that's so pushed, but this idea of like enabling the body to conform to what the soul naturally wants to do is a Jewish idea. So the reason I bring it up, you might feel like, why are you opening a can of worms? But I know that they're going to bring it up, so I feel like it's more powerful to address it head on than to be like kind of making excuses and apologizing later. I want to bring it up right away, give them the sources. I do talk about, I learned this, that in Sfat, I don't remember where I learned this, in Sfat there was a man who wasn't giving his wife a get, so the women in the community, you can do this in Sfat, it's so small and tight-knit, they got together and they refused to go to the mikvah until this guy gave his wife a get. Oh, the next day he gave his wife a gift. Okay. So I think that's such a beautiful example of like women getting together, you know? Yeah.
I just want to say, I think this also sheds some light that people aren't aware that, like in the Batei Dinim in Israel, there are actually more cases of agunim than there are agunot. And no one actually talks about that. There are halachic, a woman has to
accept
willfully accept a gift.
Not willfully.
She has to directly accept the get. Okay, there are halachic loopholes to get around each thing.
Exactly.
But,
much easier the other way than to get around it.
There are ways, but I'm just saying there is this halachic designation of a goon that people don't talk about, and there are actually more of them that are
I mentioned that. I think it's a woman who
doesn't
have to.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But she's divorced.
But it's hard to get those, and it's not right.
Can I think that this is part of teaching our girls and our young men how to be healthy people, meaning that this is all part of the whole process, you know, that they can go and pick individuals who misbehave, and we're going to find many people, Balei Tshuva, FFBs, whatever, you'll find people that misbehave, but you have to teach them, this is here for you to grow as a person, to have the parameters to live a very good moral life. You have to tap into it. And you women and men are coming in with a lot of baggage from your lives. Be a healthy person. Every caller that sits on my couch virtually goes to therapy because it all starts coming out and they're all crying. And I'm not a therapist. I'm pretty good, but they need to work these things out internally. And then just work it out. And then they're likely to marry a person with good mitos who isn't going to have all this baggage. And they won't end up in this situation. It really goes back to the beginning. And
right. There's dysfunctional
We're not going to fix all these problems.
Right.
You know, it's
okay.
Can I just say something about the get thing? Just like in a global sense, we don't want to turn into the next Hollywood. Like I really think that like, even though there's problems, we need Mashiach. But like, Lamaisa, we take marriage much more seriously than anyone else because it's hard to get in.
And
hard to
out.
Get out.
Right. And originally,
we don't want to make it easy to get out.
Right. Originally, the whole ketubah and everything, it was enabling it to be more difficult for a man to just drop his wife when he got tired of her. The whole thing was to really, you know, it's the financial thing and whatever. It's like, it wasn't, there were many other cultures where the guy just, I'd like a new wife. Okay, new, next, you know, and this was not our approach. Yeah.
Also, if you flip it a little bit and say that these are the extreme tragic, you know, situations, but in general, this whole seriousness is what gives you the security of marriage, you know, all along. This suba and everything is
By
is
the way,
terrible.
On that note, there's a little known halacha that a man and woman are not allowed to be together intimately if she doesn't know where her ketubah is.
Yes.
Maybe this is why people put it on their wall. But I explained why that is. I heard this beautiful idea from Rabbi Kelman. That for a woman to be intimate, she needs to feel like totally trusting and that her husband doesn't have one foot out the door, that he is there to stay for life, he is in it, and then she can relax and be intimate. And this is such a beautiful idea about relations, that these girls are coming from a world where women are objectified. The whole sexuality issue is disgusting out there. It's appalling for women. I seriously do not, if I hadn't become from, I don't know how I'd be raising my girls. Like, it's impossible out there for your girls not to be victimized and traumatized by the world out there as far as being a girl and growing up and being a teenager and going to college. It's horrible. So they are very much in a place to hear these things now. because they see how bad it's gotten out there, and they're willing to entertain. Wow, this is a different approach. I'm telling you, people ask me how I became from. It was I was an atheist for 25 years. It was not any like, blah, you know, like it was not that at all. It was this. I was so sick of the secular dating world, and I started meeting these, even just modern Orthodox guys on the West Side, who were like, not that they're all like this, but they were like looking at me in the eye instead of this, right? And like wanted to hear what I had to say. This was a chiddush, ladies, okay? I was like, this is what I want. And I saw the husband and wife relationship. I'm like, this is what I want. And I didn't believe in God. I started doing Shabbat before I believed in God. Again, a little weird, but whatever. I wanted into this thing. It made so much sense, especially as a feminist. There was such respect for women and dignity given to women in our world. It's a very big plus for these girls. They've had it. A lot of them are willing to listen to a different approach because it's so bad out there. Okay, moving on. The mikveh is about a woman being unclean. That's number 7. So again, you guys know probably most of this stuff. If you want a really cute video on this, Jew in the City, yeah. Splish Splash, it's adorable. I love all of her stuff. This one particularly I think was very well done. It shows a beautiful mikveh from the inside. I think it's about a 6-minute video. She goes through some nice ideas, mikveh, tikveh, whatever. It's just a beautiful, beautifully done video. I think this would especially be good actually for, you know, let's say mothers of Baal Tshuva Kalas. Like, what are you doing? What is this thing? Oh, yeah. Send them this little video. She's put together very nicely. It's beautiful, well done, and a kiddush Hashem. So I talk a little bit about the other uses of the mikveh, what we can learn from that, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. Number 8, Orthodox women don't have careers. Hot button issue. Nine. Okay. What? No, 8. Three. Number 8. Orthodox women don't have careers. So I talk about my friends are da 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 da, and I list a lot of my close friends who have high-powered careers. And then I say there's nothing in the Torah that says a woman can't work outside the home, but we do put the priority on being a wife and mom. And if the two are at war in any given situation, we believe that that trumps it. And that is a difference from the outside world, okay, where unfortunately people are sacrificing their families on the altar
of
their career.
What about people when they ask you, like, well, you know, my father's the one who stays at home and my mother's the one who works, and it's really
right.
Great, and my dad's
yeah.
A really
yes.
Good
stay. So I don't say anything about that. Oh, that's so nice. That works for you. Great. Okay. She said, what about that
stay-at-home dad?
Stay-at-home dad works out very nicely.
My mother wants to have the career. Is that okay?
You know, frankly, even the secular magazine articles that I've read on that subject, the Shalom bias is not going so well in that area. It's problematic. And look, my own shita, whenever I'm being recorded here, but
yeah.
I'm getting this from my rebbeim. It's not so pashut when the woman is out in the working world and
not.
The Spanish lady is raising
her
kids and the man is either sitting and learning or doing whatever he's doing. It's not so pashut. Yeah.
Do you ever hear about Iris Cross now? She's
no.
A Jewish woman who is not from just at a Federation event. Federation actually brought her in to speak. She's like a big feminist who worked for like, she was a journalist who was traveling all over the world, and then she decided she had 4 kids under the age of 3, like she had twins, and she decided she wants to like stay at home with her kids, and she was the one going on and on, like about, her mother's a Holocaust survivor, but she was like, about how this is really what I felt was really important for me to do, even
fantastic.
Though I had a career.
Oh.
She wrote like, The Secret Lives of Wives.
What's her last name?
Krasna?
Okay, because I'm always looking for material on this.
Also, I Am My Mother's Daughter. A bunch of like these women books.
Okay, great.
If anyone's ever in the New York, my mother's a Baal Tshuva, but she runs like she does careers that she worked in like investment banking and like now she does speaks all over the country for women, not like from women at all, but like just about getting back into the workforce after taking off time to raise kids, and she's super into that. And she's spoken for like Moore and stuff. If they're ever like, she's very
knowledgeable.
She went to Harvard, so that has like.
What's her name?
Vivian Rubin. I don't know. She doesn't say whatever.
Oh,
so.
Really?
Yeah. What?
Website.
Yeah, but her website's like backonthecareertrack.com. I think. I don't know. She's just. I know she likes
Harvard.
She's into it.
Okay.
What?
Harvard.
Yeah. She went to Harvard Business School. She's like, you know, intelligent.
Just,
yeah.
Just because these are like debunking myths about Orthodox women. In general, I don't know, in my house, we try, because there's a lot of this, you know, people coming from Reform and Conservative, to just, we don't use the word Orthodox.
Right.
It's like Torah, so last week somebody, like, really enjoyed Shabbos, she's like, can I, like, not be religious or Orthodox and still keep Shabbos?
Right.
Yeah,
Right. Sure.
What?
Of course. No, but how do you refer to Orthodox?
Torah observance. I say that.
Yeah. I say Torah observance. Okay, I just want to get through these last two. 9 Orthodox people have arranged marriages with no real dating.
I'm sorry, what?
Orthodox people have arranged marriages with no real dating. So I tell them it's forbidden by Jewish law to marry someone you're not attracted to. Obviously, this takes more than one date. I don't go into the, you know, the Satmar 2 dates at the dining room table thing. It's not necessary. The vast majority of Orthodox people don't date that way. I say that there are 2 main differences between secular dating and religious dating. The first is that there's a lot of information gathering done before the first date, which, again, I think they to relate to at this point. They've probably dated a few axe murderers at this point, and I'm just saying that, like, seriously problematic people, and they understand, oh, that would make sense. That would really have helped me, you know, before I was, like, 2 months in and then realized he, like, was whatever, psychotic in one way or another. So I tell them there's a lot of information gathering before the first date, which means that when you get on the first date, it's actually just about, you know, am I attracted? How's the chemistry, do I enjoy being with this person, how's the interaction, as opposed to, you know, I have to get through this list of questions to make sure they're normal and, like, we're on the same page. And number 2, so this gets rid of wasting time.
So you show them, if you recommend the magic touch, it goes through the whole thing about head first.
Yeah, yeah.
Even some guys, some guys will even like it.
Elevated guys.
Also,
right.
I only want to get married once.
Yeah, that's very good. I have a whole list of dating books that I recommend. And number 2, the second major difference is that there's no physical touching before marriage. And I do go into oxytocin briefly. So oxytocin, this is just a very, like, practical way to get through to these girls. Because they're like, no touching, what do you mean? Okay, so test out the goods, whatever. This is their whole mindset. Yeah. So yeah. I talk about oxytocin. Oxytocin is a hormone, a drug, that gets pumped through your veins on 2 different occasions. The first is when you're nursing your baby. Oxytocin goes through your system. This is called the bonding hormone. Why? Because this little thing basically throws up, spits up, poops, and screams its head off, and you're like, oh. I'm just gonna, like, look at his feet all day. You know, like, okay, I'm sorry, ladies, this is oxytocin. Baruch Hashem, it's a bracha from Hashem. Otherwise, we'd throw the kid out the window, okay? So oxytocin's going through our system when we're nursing so that we're bonding with the baby who's spitting up and yet screaming all day, right? What's the second time that oxytocin goes through our system? When we're physically involved with a man, okay? So it spikes with actual orgasm, but lesser forms of physical contact also cause oxytocin, and, by the way, some other hormones and drugs to go through your system also. So I do talk about this. It makes sense to them. Why would you want to bond, right, with someone that you just met and could be an axe murderer, right? So we want to make sure that we're making an educated decision. You would never go to a job interview or even to buy a car if you were drunk or high. So why are you dating in a serious fashion that you're going to spend the rest of your life with this person? Why would you want to do that if you're drunk on oxytocin, right? Now, if they're not in a place to be thinking about marriage, right, they're young college students, you know what? They file this away for future knowledge. I always tell them, you know, note to self, file this away for a few years from now. Whenever you're thinking about being in the market to make this decision, you don't want to have anything keeping you less than totally objective with your head screwed on straight. I tell them a few of my dating coaching, you know, drama stories, and it just helps them to see, oh, yeah, you know what? This is an important decision. I do want to make an educated decision. Why would I do that? And I tell them, you know, we all have a laugh about how when a woman is physically involved with someone, you know, and he decides to end it, she then stalks him. You know, this is like a common thing because a woman has a hard time letting go once the physical has been there, which means we're on a higher level. That's just how we are. We have connected in that way. Therefore, what do you mean we're not talking to each other when we pass each other on campus, right? But the guy's like, no, next, right? For women, this is very hard. And by the way, ladies, even if they don't admit it, they feel this way. I'm just telling you. All my friends from college, like, everyone felt this way. It's disgusting out there. And even if they're kind of like this in your class, it's sinking in and they're getting it. And unfortunately, maybe it'll take a traumatic experience for them to really get what you're saying. But it really makes sense to them that, wow, you know, I do want to be taken seriously. I want to feel special. I want, you know, whoever I'm with to cherish me for the right reasons. I don't want to just, like, you know, have him care about one thing. And you know what? So that makes sense to me. Yeah.
Are you able to just go into a little bit more what you answer people when they say about the test run thing? Because people are very into
that. Test, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They don't.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I talked
to them. Because, I mean, a lot of people have.
Right.
What are you saying?
Magic touch?
Yes, but of course I read that.
Okay, so what I say, right?
People have problems.
The question is, a lot of people feel like I need to test the goods out. How could I marry someone that I haven't been with, or even kissed? You know, like, hello.
Been with other people before.
Exactly. Right. So I'm in a unique position to be able to answer the question, and I tell them that number one, the way that we view sexuality in the secular world is like a skill. Devoid of anything deeper, similar to having a good backhand in tennis. If you look at Cosmo magazine, right, every article is about, you know, how to
skills,
do this,
skills,
how to
skills,
feed them, five tricks to, you know, it's like, it's insane. You know, it's like, oh, and I'm good at tennis and this also, you know, I have, this is my skill set, right? So this is like not a Jewish idea, right? 100% you should learn how to please your partner and vice versa, but it's not about like, I have a skill set that I can now do with 20 different people, right? So I talk about that first of all.
But
that
how will they see that as just as pleasurable to themselves? In other words, they will see
right.
Really
so
good.
I
it's
say the
pleasurable.
Difference between in the secular world, it's viewed as a skill that you could do with whoever. And in the Jewish world, intimacy is viewed as a physical expression of how I feel about my spouse.
Okay.
So if I'm in love and I'm married to my basheretz and we're building a healthy marriage, of course, the physical is going to be an expression of that. Now, I do tell them, just like everything else in marriage, and I mean, I give Sean Bias classes on this, this nekuda, this area in marriage, needs to be worked on just like every other area. We tend to think, or those of us who watch too many Hollywood movies, tend to think, once I marry the right person, it's going to be fireworks forever, through nursing and babies and gained weight and the tsuras and the, and everything's going to be fantastic because I'm married the right person, right? This is what they're thinking. They've watched all these movies and they think, oh, it's going to be fireworks if I marry the right person. And so I do share with them that, you know, this is an area that needs to be worked on, just like communication, just like every other area. You're going to have to work on this no matter, let's say they date the guy and test out the goods and everything's fantastic. Believe me, ladies, I mean, hello. 5 years down the road with a couple babies, trust me, there's going to be some tweaking that needs to happen, right? In the rare case where there's some sort of sexual dysfunction, that's going to be there before, during, after, like, that's going to have to be dealt with. But for the vast majority of the population who's dealing with, like, normal issues of just, you know, they have a lot on their plate or whatever, it's been 5 to 10 years into marriage and you have to get more creative and whatever it is, so new, that's going to happen no matter whether they tested the goods or not. You know, that's the truth. They could test the goods, and I think it'd be great. And 5 years down the road, they're still going to have to make some tweaking, right? Yeah.
Do you mind if I give a
yes
answer? Because I get asked this every single time I give a relationships class. What about the test drive?
Yeah.
So I teach this head, heart, hormones, the three H's, and then if you're connected, which is the process, the Jewish process, if you're connected mentally, then you connect emotionally, then you open your heart, connect emotionally. You're dying through the engagement process to be with this person because now you're so attracted and you're so connected and so on. And it's all about giving to the other person, like, and you're so attracted and you're so excited and you can't wait. And I give examples, like stories of people I know, Kalas, you know, who aren't thinking about the flowers, aren't thinking about the wedding, the dancing, their friends. It's like, I just want him. I just want him. And that both people are so excited and so passionate and focused on giving to and pleasing the other. Like, how bad could it be? Plus the fact that we have the built-in system to keep the excitement going year after year, decade after decade, by separating. And then you can go into that whole, like, forbidden fruit and how exciting that is, and that we have the keys to keep it going.
Number two.
How long do you give this class? To me, like, these couple of these things are a whole class.
Right. So I talk really fast, as you can tell. I talk very fast. It's an hour class.
An hour for all these things?
Yeah.
I don't ask questions.
We get some questions, and then usually, I mean, you can ask Mrs. Lewis. I don't know if she was here last time I did it, but I do all of it in an hour at Rutgers. And I take questions, and a lot of times the way they do it is they have me speak, and then they have their schmoozy food thing. So a lot of the girls stay and ask me questions and continue to talk until they have the second speaker. And I just basically stay until they kick me out. But I felt like I'm always torn because he brings me in once a semester. I have to deal with all the stuff that they're that's weighing on them that they don't feel necessarily comfortable asking the rabbi, and or this is bothering them. They want to talk to a woman, but yet, you know, so I talk fast.
I'm waiting for your turn.
I feel like there's like a lot of these girls will be like, these are great ideas and I want to incorporate them at the right time.
Right.
But it's not something that I'm capable of now because being on a college campus, they don't have the opportunity. The guys only want, you know, so much. And if they don't keep up, they're considered like outcasts.
Right.
So when they come up to you with this, like, is there a middle ground that they can work
Okay, so two things. First of all, my main goal with this class and my main shtick since I've been teaching for 12 years is just to break down these women's stereotypes about Orthodox Jewish women and Torah Judaism regarding women. That's my goal. My goal for this is not for them to walk out and like, oh, I'm going to put my burqa on and all that, you know? No, that's not my goal at all. My goal is just to have them walk out feeling like, oh, she was really cool. I didn't think that of Orthodox women. And wow, all those things you go with, you know, yeah, interesting idea. Okay, that's it, the small goal, right? But I just know for myself, again, coming from where I came from, had I had a class like this at the very beginning, it would have done a lot to break through my own barriers to learning, to doing everything you're doing with your students. A lot of the girls will not progress past a certain level if you don't deal with these things, because this is what's holding them back. For me, someone could have talked till they were blue in the face about Shabbos and Kabbalah and whatever. I don't care. Tell me about women in Judaism. I don't want to be part of something sexist. You know what I mean? So,
but I feel like I don't.
Oh, 10.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't say 10, but the didn't talk. I mean, I don't know what 10 is, but like no discussion of like
this is 10.
Separation, mechitza. Okay.
Right. So I don't deal with mechitza. That would be
like
a good
rabbis,
one though.
Like
but
the girl who wants to be a rabbi.
Right. Listen,
so
we could have 20 other issues also. I could be here for 3 hours.
It seems
you know.
Not that hard, rabbi.
So what do you?
I do that. Right. So now.
Okay. Fine. No. Right. No. I'm just saying. The
last sessions are so everybody can know. In this room, if you want it, and I am willing to skip it, I so don't care, it's fine, is becoming a public speaker with me, but you can continue yours. And making the most of one-on-ones next door with Hannah Goldstein and Tara Smishbacha for the non-room with Rivka Muska in 201. That's starting in about 2 minutes, so if you have to go to the bathroom,
we'll do number 10 real quick, and then
So
number 10, I do. First of all, the mechitza thing, I think on one foot is very easy to say that we're not in shul for a party and for a social thing, and like, oh, like you went shopping. That's not why we're in shul. We're in shul to daven Hashem, and we don't want to be distracted. Okay.
The guys, they can't concentrate on something like God.
Forget the guys. I can't concentrate. What are you talking about?
Guys feel like, well, some guys will tell me whatever.
Okay. That's true also.
Okay,
I do deal with number 10. It's sexist that women don't get called up to the Torah and can't be rabbis.
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, the best book, I have two, my favorite two books on this subject are Rebbetzin Heller, Our Bodies, Our Souls, and Marina Goodman, Why Do I Have to Stand Behind the Mechitza When I Could Be a Prayer Leader? They're both excellent.
What
was the second
one?
Marina Goodman, Why Do I Have to Stand Behind the Mechitza If I Can Be a Prayer Leader? If you read these two books, you will get a lot of ammunition that I can't say in the next 1 minute. But basically, you know, what Esther Wien was saying is true in the sense that, you know, a lot of, let's say, what a lot of us are doing is what the job of a rabbi, right? We're counseling, we're coaching, we're guiding someone through their growth, we're facilitating shilas, etc. There are very few things that a woman can't do because of certain legalities and certain specifics that Rebbetzin Heller says much better than I could, so please see that book. But I do highlight, if I have time for it, which oftentimes we don't get to, but I do highlight the fact that, in my opinion, the most sexist thing that we could do would be to say that a woman is only valuable, I'm talking your language, in Avodas Hashem, if she's doing what the man is doing. There is nothing more sexist than that. So I try to get across to them in their own language that being a real feminist means valuing what women have to contribute to the world and not looking at what the boys are doing. That makes me valuable, legitimized, equal, etc., because I can do what they can do. That's sexist, right? Whereas a true feminist is saying, wow, women were brought to the world to do something special and unique. I have a whole class on the creation of women and what does this teach us about a woman's unique role in the world. There are certain things that we can do, ladies, that a man is not capable of doing, and he cannot fix the world in a way that we can. If I'm instead saying, oh, you know, I think I'd rather put on tefillin and, you know, do X, Y, Z, oh my gosh, this is such a missed opportunity, right? So I try to get them to just shift their paradigm a little bit. Yes, I'm a feminist. Oh, so if I'm a feminist, then I don't want to only value what the men are doing. That's not my standard of success. I want to figure out, like, what does the Torah say the women are supposed to be doing and go from there. And I do talk about the fact that, you know, you don't get extra credit if you fast on Yom Kippur when you're sick, right? If you're legitimately have a health issue and you fast anyway, even though the rabbi said you shouldn't, you don't get extra credit for that. It's actually an Aveira, right? So I'm talking your language now. So I don't get extra credit for putting on tefillin, right? When I'm, like, not even really doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. Just a funny little side story. I used to be very involved in JOFA, Jewish Orthodox Feminist Alliance. When I first became from, this was a great stepping stone for me because I was like, wow, I can be like feminist and Orthodox at the same time. Okay, I have major issues with them now, but the time was a very good thing for me. And I went to one of their conferences. They had like 400 women in the room, right? And I forget the rabbi who got up and spoke. But anyway, he got up and spoke. He's like to very left of Orthodoxy, but nevertheless, this is what he said. He said, you know, I see on the schedule there's all these workshops on, like, you know, have women having greater public roles in synagogue life and tefillin and tzitzis and this and that. How many women here are covering their hair? And everyone started laughing because, of course, there were probably 3 out of 400 that were covering their hair. So he went on to say that, you know, really you could argue that covering your hair is halacha and that tefillin, a woman taking on tefillin or something like that, is extra credit. That's how, you know, he kind of put it. So you're blowing out on something that is halacha for you, and you're taking on extra fluff, right? You're taking on icing, you don't have the cake. So I think that we just need to shift sometimes our perspective on, like, if I believe that God created me, I want to do what he wants me to do, as opposed to finding my own way of, you know, I think I would do better doing X, Y, Z.